This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Emperor's Mask by Ben S. Dobson, narrated by Travis Baldry. Chapter 1. Tane Carver sprinted along the busy Port Haven waterfront, breaking through the linked hands of a goblin couple as he shoved his way past. He ignored the indignant cries behind him, only glancing over his shoulder to see if he'd lost his pursuer. The dwarf was closing in on him. Thoric Irondriver stood out even among the eclectic Port Haven rabble of gnomes and dwarves and sprites and ogren and more. He was no more than 4.5 feet in height, average for a dwarf, but his shoulders looked near as broad across as he was tall, and the biceps beneath were as big as Tane's head and covered in ugly black tattoos of iron spikes and wire. The tattoos stretched across his chest, too, exposed beneath a stained leather vest. Above a thick black beard and a twisted scowl of a face, his bald head was inked in the same pattern. He charged down the street in a straight line without regard for the people in front of him, and he didn't need to shove them aside like Tane did. Most got one look at the furious rail engine of a dwarf bearing down on them and cleared the way. Tane gripped the stolen artifact tighter in his hand and pushed himself faster, weaving among the people on the street for cover. Irondriver was a mage, which meant giving him a clear sightline could only lead to pain. Not that he needs magic to break me in half. Spellfire, this had better work. It wasn't the best plan he'd ever had, but stealing something, and making sure he was seen doing it, had been the easiest way to lure Irondriver out of his heavily warded black market workshop. The alley he and Kadka had agreed on was just ahead on his left, a narrow path between low warehouses. Tane tried to shoulder past a lovely 9-foot ogren woman, and the impact shook his teeth like he'd collided with a stone pillar at speed. He bounced off, gripping his arm, and stumbled toward the mouth of the alley. "Oh, dear, I'm sorry," the woman said in a melodious voice, just like an ogren to apologize to him for running into her. But Tane didn't have time to answer. The heavy thud of Irondriver's feet was close behind as he darted into the alley. It went perhaps 40 feet back before turning sharply to the left, just a narrow space out of the way of the crowd. If things went badly, it was best not to have bystanders around. Halfway down, Tane slowed and turned, holding up his hands.
"Wait, I'll give it back."
The scowl across Irondriver's thick jaw rose into a cruel smile.
"Too late for that, thief. Shouldn't have robbed me if you don't want to pay the price."
He advanced on Tane and pulled a short blade from behind his back. Mage or no, apparently he preferred to hurt people the old-fashioned way. Tane backed away slowly and slipped 2 fingers into his waistcoat pocket to rub the battered brass watch case there, an old nervous habit. "For a man selling faulty artifacts to people who can't tell the difference," he said, "you're surprisingly passionate about criminal justice." He glanced down at the artifact he'd stolen, a brass tube just wide enough to fit a rolled charm, sealed on one end with a small button on the side. A flash tube, designed to launch colorful flash charms into the air, though it could be used with more dangerous charms as well. Illegal without a license, but hardly worth so much trouble. "I wonder, if I press the button, do you think this thing would work or explode?" He pointed the open end at the dwarf. Irondriver hesitated, flinching, and then narrowed his eyes.
"It ain't even loaded." He furrowed his heavy brow. "Who are you, then? Someone send you after me?"
"A client didn't care for your work on her stove, specifically the fact that you overlooked some common safety glyphs. She was burned quite badly." If Tane backed off much further, he'd be against the wall where the alley turned. He was far enough from the street now. This was the place. "I'm really hoping that this is the part where you swear to change your ways and make things right with Miss Utris."
"Bitch shouldn't have tried to buy cheap. The price I offer, they ain't all going to be perfect."
Irondriver shrugged his massive shoulders.
"Should have paid someone bigger to come after me, too. Talking's done, thief."
Tossing his knife from hand to hand, he started forward once more. This time, Tane didn't retreat. Instead, he reached into his pocket and crushed the seal on the charm inside. A translucent dome shimmered to life around Tane and Iron Driver, glowing a faint silver blue. Iron Driver glanced back at the silvery barrier just behind his shoulder and laughed.
"Too late to keep me out now!"
And finally, Tane allowed himself the smile he'd been holding back.
"Oh, it's not meant to keep you out."
Kadka crouched atop the low brick warehouse on the south side of the alleyway, waiting for Carver to give the signal. As usual, he was talking too much, which was often amusing, but there was a mage to fight, and waiting on a rooftop was almost as boring as watching closed doors at the university. There was a reason she wasn't a guard anymore. The tattooed dwarf advanced, tossing his knife back and forth. A shimmer of silver then, and the shield was up. There it was, the signal. Kadka backed off a few steps, launched herself into a run, and vaulted over the side of the roof, snarling for effect. Iron Driver looked up at the sound, saw her falling. His eyes widened and he started to turn. Too late. She passed easily through the shield and hit him hard from near 20 feet up, sending him sprawling to the ground on his back. His knife flew free of his hand, skittered across the ground, and struck the inside of the shield with a silver flash. Even with the dwarf to break the momentum of her fall, the impact still knocked Kadka to her hands and knees. She and Iron Driver both gained their feet at the same time. Kadka flashed Iron Driver a sharp-toothed grin.
"Should have sent someone bigger, you said?"
He stared at her bared teeth.
"Half-orc,"
he spat, somewhere between disgust and fear. His eyes went to Carver, and then back to Kadka again.
You're the Magebreakers, ain't you?
I hate that name, muttered Carver.
He's not wrong, though,
said Kadka, still grinning. She took a single step toward the dwarf. Iron Driver turned and ran. Or tried to. He hadn't gone more than 2 feet before he struck the translucent barrier. A flash of silver sent him stumbling back. Carver had scribed the charm and commissioned it from Bastion, a reversed shield, made to keep things in rather than out. Kadka never understood much when he talked about magical theory, but he'd been clear enough that it wouldn't last long. Which was fine by her. A time limit made things more interesting. Iron Driver broke right, going for the knife he'd dropped. She moved to intercept, kicking the blade away and tackling him against the shield. He grabbed her arms, pried them off with an angry grunt. He was stronger than she was used to. Ogryn aside, there weren't many in Thalas who could grapple with her. A pleasant surprise. She laughed as he shoved her back. Taking advantage of the space he'd created, Iron Driver started to chant in the magical language Carver called the Lingua. He was already raising a hand. Kadka regained her balance and charged. A fist to the throat usually stopped a spell, but she could already tell she wasn't going to make it.
"Hey!"
Carver's voice, and then a brass tube struck Iron Driver in the side of the face. The dwarf's head snapped to the side, and a wave of silver force surged high from his outstretched hand, striking the ceiling of the shield dome over Kadka's head. The artifact Carver had thrown clattered to the ground. Kadka was on Iron Driver before he could open his mouth again. She wrapped her leg behind his and shoved him hard. He toppled backward to the cobblestones. Following him down, she landed with her forearm across his throat, cutting off his breath and his voice. With her free hand, she pinned one of his heavily muscled arms to the ground. Iron Driver clawed at her eyes with the other, his face flushed red beneath the iron-black tattoos on his scalp. A moment later, Carver was beside her, putting his full body weight against the grasping hand to hold it down.
"Inside his vest, right side. I saw him tuck it away when he was showing me his wares."
Kadka nodded.
"No spells,"
she said to Iron Driver, and lifted her arm from his throat.
"Bitch,"
Iron Driver croaked, and immediately began to mutter in the lingua. She grinned. She'd been hoping he'd do that. She slammed her forehead against his face and felt something crunch. Blood gushed from Iron Driver's broken nose. He kept chanting in a choked, gurgling voice. Kadka headbutted him again, and this time his eyes rolled back and he went still. A moment later, the shield flickered out of existence. She glanced at Carver with a grin.
"Told you, is more time than I need."
"Can't argue with results."
Carver's eyes went to her forehead and he made a face. "A bit messy, though." Katka rubbed her brow, and her fingers found blood, warm and sticky. But not her blood, which was the only thing that mattered. She wiped an arm across her face to clean the rest away, staining the white fur on the back of her hand red.
"Messy is what works sometimes," she said.
With her other hand, she dug inside Iron Driver's vest until she found a coin-sized badge etched with glyphs and held it up for Carver to see.
"This will get us into workshop?"
"It should," said Carver, rising to his feet. "And the artifacts inside will be all the evidence the Blue Caps need to arrest him. Fraud, negligence, illegal artifice." He glanced down at Iron Driver's bloodied face and broken nose. "Better roll him onto his side, or he'll choke on the blood before they get the chance."
"Or we could just take him now."
A woman's voice, and one Katka knew. She stood and turned to see a slim, brown-skinned half-elf entering the alley, dressed in a charcoal topcoat and trousers, black hair bound back from her face in a simple bun. Constable Inspector Indri Lovial. Even out of uniform, she had the air of a Blue Cap, a certain self-assured authority over the situation despite only now walking into it. A half-dozen others of various races and sizes flanked her, all in plainclothes, but Katka knew a constable when she saw one.
"Ree," said Carver, "how did you find us?"
"Finding people is my job," said Indri. "And as usual, you left a trail of angry people behind you."
She glanced at the bloody fur on Katka's hand and then tipped her head at the motionless dwarf sprawled on the ground.
"Is it too much to hope that you had some reason for beating this man senseless?"
Carver spread his hands indignantly. "You say that like we don't always have a reason." Indri cocked an eyebrow.
"What about last month, when you broke into that artificer's house? She hadn't done anything."
"Was easy mistake,"
Katka said mildly. Carver and Indri could squabble for hours if she didn't mediate.
"Her sister sells dangerous spells with her name. We find one because we chase other first. You know this."
"I know it," Indri allowed. "But that didn't make it any easier to keep you out of his cell."
"This is different," said Carver. "Nobody's framing Iron Driver. If you come with us to his workshop, there's proof."
"You can explain later,"
Indri interrupted, and motioned for two constables to see to the unconscious dwarf. Katka stepped aside to give them room.
"Right now, you two are coming with me."
"Now?"
Katka liked Indri, but this felt wrong. It would have been far easier to summon them with a sending. Tracking them down like this implied she wanted to catch them off their guard.
"Why?"
Indri let out a heavy sigh and rubbed the bridge of her nose.
"Because," she said, "you might be murder suspects."
Chapter 2 Tane followed Indri through the streets of the Griffin's Roost, surrounded by an escort of four plainclothes constables. Two humans, a three-foot-something gnomish man, and a towering Ogryn woman guarding the rear. Katka walked at his side, eagerly examining the opulent homes of the roost. Elaborate mage-light lamps lined the road, unlit in the afternoon sunlight, and high gates loomed all along both sides. In front of every gate, a pair of hired guards stood watch in expensive uniforms. Behind every one was a massive estate, all open grass and elaborate hedges and elegant statuary. Each estate had an enormous manor house at the center, all of them unique in architecture and design, and yet somehow the same as all the others, in a fundamental way that Tane recognized but couldn't explain. Horse-drawn carriages waited at the ready by most houses, or expensive anchorist carts with loud, ponderous engines. This place was so far removed from the cramped streets and joined brick-front homes of Porthaven that it might as well have been a different world. "You're obviously not taking us to Stookton Yard," said Tane, "so we must be going to the crime scene. Someone was murdered in the roost? I can't remember the last time that happened." There was no district in Thallus more secure than the Griffin's Roost. The constabulary responded far more diligently to any hint of criminal activity here than they did in places like Porthaven or Greenstone, and every manor had hired guards and thorough wards. "What's going on, Ree?"
"You'll see when we get there," said Indri, and increased her pace.
She was hiding something. He could tell.
"You can't really think we killed someone."
"If I did, you'd be chained up in a cell right now. I only talked Chief Durin out of having you arrested by convincing him I'd learn more from your reactions to the scene, and those won't matter much if you already know what you're going to see.
Tane raised an eyebrow. Why does our reaction matter at all? Why would either of us have anything to do with a murder in the Griffin's Roost? We don't exactly spend much time here.
Orcs are not so welcome in fancy houses, said Katka,
peering through the bars of the nearest gate at the elaborate hedge sculptures beyond. She glanced at Indri then, with a slight frown.
Is this why you think Killer is orc?
Like I said, I can't tell you anything yet.
A familiar exasperation crept into Indri's voice.
I need to do this the way I've been ordered to do it. No special treatment. It hasn't exactly helped my career bailing the mage breakers out of trouble every other week.
Don't call us that, Tane protested reflexively. Mage breakers sounds like a penny dreadful from some basement anchorist press. Indri rolled her eyes.
Good luck stopping it. It's already all over Thallus. My point is, you two haven't been at this more than 6 weeks, and most of the constabulary already thinks you're a public menace. Half of Fendal Avenue is still caved in from your little adventure underneath the bank last month.
That wasn't our fault, Tane protested. We didn't dig the tunnel. We were just trying to get Mrs. Dukal's husband back for her, which we did, by the way.
Yes, you did.
Indri's scowl softened at the corners.
You usually manage to help someone underneath all the chaos. That's why I keep defending you. But I won't be able to do that if I'm demoted back to patrol constable.
That was hard to argue with, and Tane knew how much Indri cared about her position in the Blue Caps. Fair enough, he said. No more questions. Lead the way. She pointed up the street to the next estate.
Come on, it's just here.
She led them to a huge wrought-iron gate that towered over even Katka by her height again, large even compared to the ones that had come before. There was no family name on the gateposts, only a number, 21. But a pair of guardsmen stood outside in uniforms of deep red and green that Tane recognized immediately. House Rose Petal, the only sprite house with a seat in the Senate. Someone was killed here? Tane peered through the iron bars at the vast grounds beyond. The Rose Petals are a great house of the Senate. Who would... Indri turned a glare on him that he knew all too well. Right, he said. No more questions. The guards at the gate, two large human men, stood to attention as Indri came near.
Constable Inspector, one of them said. We haven't let anyone in since you left, as ordered.
His tone was surprisingly crisp and formal for a hired man. Indri nodded her approval.
Open the gates, she said. If anyone else comes asking around after we're in, don't let on that anything is out of the ordinary, and notify me if anyone shows unusual interest.
One of the guards turned and laid his palm against a glyphed copper panel set into a gate pillar. The glyphs flared silver blue. Checking his astral signature, Tane surmised. And then the huge gates swung inward with a loud creak. Indri led them through, and the slight tingle of a ward ran over Tane's body as they passed into the estate. Apparently the Blue Caps had already added their names to the list of exemptions. On the other side, a long, hedge-lined road led toward the manor house. Those weren't Rose Petal guards, were they? Tane said, glancing over his shoulder.
You've got constables on the gate in borrowed uniforms, and you're all in plain clothes. The Blue Caps must really want this kept quiet.
Now that he was looking, he noticed a dozen other men and women scouring the grounds among shaped hedges and magically landscaped ponds and the like. Also constables, Tane was sure, despite the lack of signature blue caps.
Not just us, said Indri. Like you said, the Rose Petals are a great house of the Senate. This is a sensitive matter.
And Chief Durin assigned it to you?
Tane raised an eyebrow. I thought you were on the verge of being demoted.
Lady Abena personally requested I lead the investigation. I suppose she trusts me after the Nieris matter.
She swallowed there and looked down. She and Tane had both lost a friend to the former university chancellor's conspiracy, but Indri had taken it much harder. She'd known Alea all her life.
He didn't like it, but the Lady Protector outranks the Chief Constable.
He's good woman, Lady Abena. Katka said. Knows talent. You are best choice.
Thank you, Katka.
Indri gave her a slight smile. Katka shrugged.
It's true. Most blue caps I meet are stupid, Poskin.
Thank you, Katka.
Indri said again, and glanced pointedly at the constables escorting them. Tane chuckled under his breath. Better change the subject. Kadka didn't always take the hint, although she was improving. He gestured ahead. Are we heading for the main house or somewhere else on the grounds? The manor towered just ahead now, a four-story home with huge gabled windows along the roof and a great marble stairway leading to a front door large enough to admit a full-grown manicore. Everything on the Rose Petal estate was oversized, it seemed. Sprite homes were usually built to accommodate guests larger than their hosts, but this seemed like overcompensation.
Inside, said Indri.
She led them up the stairs to another pair of guards, who threw open the doors at her order. No telltale tingle of a ward prickled Tane's skin as he passed inside, which was inconceivable for a senate house. The Rose Petals could afford far better than the simple protections around the outer estate.
They must have taken the house wards down for the investigation. It was the only thing that made sense.
There was no one inside but more out-of-uniform blue caps, scouring the house with detection spells and divinations. The Rose Petals and their servants would already have been taken to Stookton Yard for questioning. As far as Tane knew, both Elsa Rose Petal, the senior senator of the house, and her son Byron, the junior, lived on the family's main estate. It was strange to think of either one sitting in a shabby interrogation chamber at the yard. But maybe they aren't. I don't know who the victim is yet. Following Indri through the house, Tane couldn't help but note the juxtaposition of large and small occupying the same space. Ornate, 9-foot-tall doors with smaller sprite-sized ones cut into their centers, a massive, curving stairway to the upper floors with perches along the railing for the tiny and winged, a study containing a great oaken desk beside its miniature twin on a raised pedestal, so that whoever occupied them would be at eye level with one another. All of it was illuminated by silvery mage light, not the simple globes Tane had become accustomed to at the university, but chandeliers and wall sconces of sculpted bronze and artfully shaped glass. The manor had clearly been designed and decorated to show that the Rose Petals' wealth and importance far outmeasured their diminutive stature. On the third floor, yet another pair of guards met them outside one of the manor's huge doors. It was closed, along with a smaller opening at its center, but Tane had glanced into some of the rooms along the hall, and it wasn't hard to guess that this door led to someone's personal chambers, just like the rest.
"No one's disturbed the scene?"
Indri asked.
"No one, Inspector Lovial,"
answered one of the guards, a white-haired elven woman.
"Only the diviners have been inside since you left, and they didn't touch anything." "Good,"
Indri said.
"We're going in."
She motioned them aside and pushed open the door, holding it for Tane and Kadka.
"Just me and the Magebreakers."
She smirked at Tane there.
"The rest of you, wait here."
Tane stepped inside, with Kadka just behind. The door opened into a small outer chamber that lacked the rest of the manor's concessions to the larger races. Save for a single full-sized chair against the wall, the furniture was all sprite-sized, sitting on raised platforms. A desk, a reading chair and book table, a reclining couch by one window, all small enough to seat a child's doll. Recessed into one wall was a little bookcase filled with quarter-sized books.
"Looks empty," said Kadka. "Like someone leaves too fast, forgets some things."
She was right. It was the smallest room they'd yet seen, but even so, none of the furnishings took up much space. It had a certain abandoned look to it. "Probably hard to avoid when you're a foot tall and insist on living in a house this size," Tane said, still looking around. A painting of two dragonfly-winged sprites hung above the tiny fireplace, a younger man and an older woman with similar features. Byron Rose Petal and his mother Elsa, almost certainly. The room must belong to one of them, the victim. But which one? There was no sign of a murder, though. He raised an eyebrow at Indri.
"He's in the bedroom."
Indri pointed at the doorway across the chamber.
"Go ahead."
"He. So it's Byron." With growing unease, Tane strode through the next doorway, Indri and Kadka just behind. He wouldn't have thought so much blood could come out of a man so small. Byron Rose Petal lay on his small bed on a dais at the far side of the room, but he was unrecognizable as the man in the painting above the fireplace. A bronze spike had been driven down through his face, pinning it against the pillow. On a larger man, it might have left the facial features intact, but a sprite's head was small enough that the inch-wide spike had crushed it almost from ear to ear. Some death spasm had crookedly unfurled one dragonfly-like wing from his back, its natural iridescence masked by the matte wine-red of dried blood. The same color stained the sheets and the mattress and the dais, running over the edge to pool on the floor below. Tane's stomach heaved, and he looked away, but not before noticing one last detail. The spike through Byron Rosepetal's face wasn't a spike at all. It was sculpted into the shape of an archaic mage's staff, with a crown encircling the head. The sigil of the Knights of the Emperor. Chapter 3 Tane couldn't make himself look any closer. Spellfire, there's nothing left of his face. Cadca was less squeamish. She stepped up to examine the body, and out of the corner of his eye, Tane saw her bend down to peer at the staff spike jutting from the victim's head.
Is same symbol on Nieris' badge, yes?
It is, Tane confirmed, swallowing against nausea. The Mage Emperor's sigil. Or it was, once. Now the Knights of the Emperor are using it. If we believe they even exist. The ex-chancellor had supposedly been one of those knights, and killed Alea for them in an attempt to sabotage the Protectorate's first airship. He'd claimed there were more who would carry on the work, but after the incident aboard the Hesliar, neither Tane nor the constabulary had been able to trace the order any further, to find any sign that they existed outside of Nieris' broken mind. Until now. Still trying to avoid the grisly scene at the far end of the room, Tane glanced at Indri. Is this why you brought us here? I thought you said we were suspects. I never found anything more than you did about the Knights of the Emperor.
It's more than that, Indri said.
She stepped forward to grab Cadca's arm, preventing her from touching the spike.
Let me show you. Tane, you're going to have to look.
Reluctantly, Tane turned toward the body once more. If he unfocused his eyes, it almost looked unreal, like a toy, a scene laid out by some deeply disturbed child. He wasn't sure if that made it better or worse. Indri took a handkerchief from her breast pocket and covered her fingers, then reached out and gave the crown at the end of the spike a half turn. It moved easily at her touch, clearly designed to do so. A band of copper ran around the outside of the crown, etched with a series of glyphs that flared a sudden silver blue. A face appeared, suspended in the air above Byron Rosepetal's ruined one. Or rather, a mask. It was metallic, probably brass, featureless but for two slitted eye holes that glowed from behind with silver blue light. Etched down the middle, the Mage Emperor's crowned staff stretched from chin to forehead, separating the smooth oval into two halves. The eye slits appeared to be staring directly at Tane. He took a step to one side, and the mask shifted to follow his movement. An illusion, it has to be. Even as he thought it, Cadca swept her fingers across the space, and they passed freely through. Suddenly, a deep, distorted voice boomed from behind the mask.
The Emperor who will be is soon crowned, and on that day, it is not the mages who will break.
The mask flickered out of existence. Silence for a long moment, and then Tane said, "Not the mages who will break? You think that's about us, some kind of taunt for the mage breakers?" He scowled, and not only because he'd said mage breakers aloud. He didn't much like the idea that a man might have been murdered to send him and Cadca a message.
"I think so," said Indri. "There are rumors about what you did to Nieris, and if these knights of the Emperor are real, they can't be pleased about it. But all my superiors can see is that you're involved somehow. Chief Durin wants you brought in. I hoped you might know something or find something I didn't. Something to send the investigation in another direction."
"So our reactions pass muster, then?" Tane asked, quirking up an eyebrow.
"I never really thought you'd kill someone, Tane. You know that. But I had to do this right, for appearances."
"And real killer doesn't turn so green at sight of blood, I think,"
said Cadca, with a toothy grin that was far from appropriate for the situation. Tane shot Cadca a glare and then looked back at Indri. "Fine. I don't have the first idea who did this or why, but if there's something to find, we'd better find it before some idiot decides to arrest us.
Ugh, that means I'm going to have to get closer, doesn't it?
Reluctantly, he approached Byron Rosepetal's bed. What have you got so far?
His mother came to check on him when he didn't come for breakfast this morning, and found him like this, said Indri. Divinations on the body say he was killed last night, about an hour before midnight. But that's all. He was asleep when he died, so no final memory. And our diviners can't find a trace of anyone on the murder weapon at all.
There wasn't much to see in the bed or on the floor. Just blood.
None?
Tane looked over his shoulder at Indri with a raised eyebrow. You mean it was masked, or...
Not masked, said Indri. There's just nothing there. Like no one had touched it before it went through the victim's head.
Mask is meant to hide traces, yes?
Katka asked, with a furrowed brow.
This is different? How do you know?
It's hard to erase the past, said Tane. Masking traces on an object usually just means blurring astral signatures so they're hard to follow. In the black market, they'll purposely pass goods between enough hands that any meaningful signature gets lost in the noise. But if there's no signature but the victim's, either no one has touched this thing for a long while, or whoever did is somehow invisible to divination.
Like you,
Indri said, looking thoughtfully at Katka. Katka raised her hands.
Not me. Was with Carver.
No, of course you didn't kill him,
Indri clarified.
But we could be looking for someone like you. Full-blooded orcs are hard to divine, but I've managed it before. It would have to be another half-orc.
Possible, said Tane. But where do they come from? I've never even seen one besides Katka, or heard of one, for that matter, outside a few undetailed accounts in texts at the university. And I get the impression there aren't many even in Sverna. Isn't that right, Katka? Katka nodded.
Happens, but rare. I never meet another.
So, for all we know, the astral invisibility could be a random fluke of birth, unique to her, said Tane. And even if there's another half-orc Anthalus with the same ability, it would only explain getting by detection spells. Physical wards still stop even Katka when she lacks the right permissions, and I promise you no half-orc has open access to a Senate house. Tane wasn't entirely sure how Katka's magical elusiveness worked, but it only seemed to apply to astral detection. A ward didn't need to search the Astra. If a creature was physically touching it, it didn't need to know anything but that they lacked proper permission.
I suppose it's not very likely,
Indri admitted.
Look, I'm grasping for any lead at all. We haven't found anything remotely solid. That's why you're here.
Tane gestured at the staff spike jutting from Byron Rosepetal's body and winced again at the sight.
What about the gem?
There was a small topaz embedded in the handle, mostly unclouded. You have to be able to divine the mage who powered it. There's no hiding that.
We followed it up,
Indri said.
A bulk supplier from the Stookton Circle markets. We're questioning her, but most likely it's just one of thousands like it sold every day.
So you really haven't found anything?
Tane asked. No witnesses? No triggered detections?
No one in the house heard anything,
Indri said.
None of the guards saw anyone enter the grounds or the house. No detection spells were triggered. By all appearances, nobody was here at all. But someone killed this man, and it certainly wasn't a suicide. And whoever did it, they passed through formidable wards around the house and the estate. The rose petals can afford the best.
Tane glanced over his shoulder at Indri. Portals are blocked on the grounds, too, I assume. That was standard practice for any suite of security spells. Portals were exceptionally dangerous. And in the wake of the Nieris scandal, wards against them had been tightened all over Thallus.
They are,
Indri confirmed.
Not even the family can open one, unless they lower the blocking spells.
Tane nodded. So the question is, how did the killer get in?
Here,
said Katka. She was peering at a large window that opened onto a lower section of gabled roof.
Came in here. Still is scuffed.
She tested the lower pane. It lifted easily.
And unlocked.
Of course it is, Tane muttered. Why bother to lock things when you have wards? Magic never fails. Indri ignored him and gave Katka a nod.
I noticed the same thing, but there are guards all over the estate in addition to the detections and wards. How anyone got to this window unseen, I haven't the faintest idea.
Tane glanced around the walls, noting the ward glyphs near the ceiling. The wards are keyed to astral signature? Indri gave him a short nod.
They're down for the investigation. You probably noticed when we came in. The outer estate wards work off a simple guest list, which is easy enough to manage, but this one is too much trouble to add permissions to.
I use something like it for my office, said Tane. As close to flawless as it gets. No badges to steal or semantics to abuse. Spells and wards worked by making requests of the Astra, the plane of magical energy that lay behind the physical world, and the Astra interpreted instructions very literally. Precision and specificity were key. In this case, the ward was set to allow passage only by specific astral link. Every guest had to provide a divination focus. Hair, blood, fingernail clippings, to be added to the ward's exemptions.
I always wonder with powerful wards, why do they not stop more? Air.
The corner of Katka's mouth turned up to reveal her teeth.
Clothes.
Anything worn reasonably close to the skin is folded into a person's astral signature unless a spell is specifically told otherwise, said Tane. Largely because of the problem you're alluding to so tastefully. The Astra is fairly literal, but it does obey certain conventions if they become common enough. As for air, wards are usually keyed to sentient things. That glyph there? He pointed to the ward glyphs, at a circle with the upper arc of a half-circle inside it. Basically means everything sentient. There are refinements from there and inclusions. Let through harmless animals, keep out obvious dangers like fire and lightning. But for anyone capable of higher thought, there's no way around a ward like this. If it doesn't recognize your astral signature, you're not getting in. That's a distinction used often in spellcraft. Sentient versus non-sentient. Wards mostly care about the former, but the latter is a standard safety precaution. There are plenty of spells and artifacts you don't want to be able to hurt people.
Like Iron Driver's stove,
Katka offered. Right, said Tane. If he'd used the proper restrictions, Miss Utris couldn't have been burned. It's actually interesting. The glyph for all things or everything is a plain circle, and originally if you wanted a broadly targeted spell, you refined from there. But the distinction between sentient and non-sentient came up often enough that mages got into the habit of shorthanding the glyphs. An inner half-circle, upward, he nodded again toward the same half-circle within a circle on the ceiling, for all things sentient, and downward for all things not, which is convenient enough, but in some ways it's an example of why magic can be so unreliable. Like I said before, common enough conventions become ingrained in the Astra, so even a language designed for precision like the lingua can morph through—
It never ceases to amaze me, Indri interrupted, that someone who distrusts magic so much always sounds so happy talking about the minutiae of magical process, but perhaps this isn't the time.
Tane flushed slightly. He'd almost managed to forget, for a moment, the grisly scene in front of him. Sorry. My point is, the strictness of the wards should narrow things down. The voice behind that mask had to be on the list of ward exemptions. Probably someone who was in the house already. The windowsill could have been scuffed as a mislead.
That's where it gets complicated, said Endry. This wasn't the only murder.
What? Tane whirled to face her. When?
The night before last. Olnod Stuck.
Tane knew the name. The junior senator of House Stuck, the Senate's sole gnomish house. Who, as it happened, had something very important in common with Byron Rosepetal. Another non-magical member of a Senate house. And let me guess, the similarities don't end there.
I can show you,
Indri said. She didn't wait for an answer. Her eyes went unfocused for an instant. And then Tane was somewhere else. Through Indri's eyes, he could see the scene of the Stuck murder. A young gnomish man, lying in his bed with a bronze staff driven through his face. Just like Byron Rosepetal. But unlike the sprite, Olnod Stuck's features were largely intact. The spike went through his forehead, slightly off-center to the left, and just below it, a pair of empty green eyes stared sightlessly at the ceiling. He had the broad face common to his people, with small round ears, a large nose, and a wide mouth. Rivulets of blood ran down his temples, forked around his nose and ears, stained his lips. The bed beneath him was soaked crimson. There was no denying the similarity between the two crimes. Tane had to swallow back another wave of nausea, even as the image faded. Spellfire, give me some warning before you do that.
You'll live, said Indri.
Katka was looking at him impatiently.
What is it? I don't see sending.
Her astral invisibility meant even a divination as simple as ascending couldn't find her without a focus. Inconvenient sometimes. I was right, said Tane. They were both killed in the same way.
Indri nodded.
Both in their sleep, so we have no final memories to work with. Both with a bronze staff like this one, driven through the skull without a trace left on it for divination.
Tane couldn't help but shift his eyes to Byron's bloody bed there. A question came to his lips, one he wasn't sure he wanted to know the answer to, one he had to know the answer to. Was the illusion set into the crown the same? Do you think? Was it a message for me and Khadka? Indri shook her head.
The same image of the mask, but a different message. No reference to the Magebreakers, at least not that I could see. Here.
She muttered in the lingua, and suddenly the image of a faceless mask bearing the Mage Emperor's sigil was hovering before her, an evoked illusion this time, so Khadka could see. That strange, distorted voice intoned,
"The time of the magical draws near. All praise the Emperor who will be."
Nothing about Magebreakers, which meant the message here at the Rose Petal Manor could just be unfortunate wording. Considering two men were dead, Tane felt a little bit guilty over the surge of relief that came with that. If the Stooks were involved, he very much didn't want to be, didn't want to reopen old wounds. Khadka cocked her head.
"The Emperor who will be. Same in both. Who is this? Man behind the mask?"
"I don't think so," said Indri. "These messages talk about him in the third person, like the masked man is some sort of herald. But whose? I can't say."
"Maybe no one's," Tane said. "We can't be sure it's more than some lunatic's wishful thinking. But I have a bad feeling that our killer has someone specific in mind." He looked to Indri. "What do you think?"
"I'm not certain of anything yet," said Indri. "But Byron Rosepetal and Ulnad Stuk didn't have much in common beyond the lack of magic. Their families aren't known for seeing eye to eye."
That was true enough. The Stooks were bankers and merchants with a reputation for fiscal responsibility, and they tended to oppose the Rose Petal's frequent and extravagant proposals in the Senate.
"And when two non-magical junior senators are murdered in 2 days, it suggests a certain pattern."
Tane nodded. "You might be dealing with a magical extremist targeting candidates for Protector of the Realm, you mean? The highest office in Oddish government could only be held by those without magecraft, chosen in the Senate from candidates put forward by the great houses. Most houses used their junior senator appointments as a way to groom such candidates for leadership. But are you looking for an agent of a vast, shadowy order, or just a random fanatic with a Mage Emperor obsession?"
"All I know is that I can't waste any time," said Indri. "We've managed to keep both murders quiet for now, but that won't last. When word gets out, it's going to be a mess. And until we know how it happened, we don't know how to stop the next killing."
"I still don't see how two murder scenes overly complicates things," said Tane. "Compare the exemptions on both sets of wards and look for overlaps. That shouldn't be a very long list of suspects."
"It isn't,"
Indri agreed.
"But whose names do you suppose are on it?"
And then he understood. "Oh, right." Khadka looked between the two of them with a raised eyebrow.
"I don't see. What is problem?"
"The only people likely to be on the guest list for multiple Senate houses are members of other Senate houses," Tane explained. "And investigating families that powerful?"
"It's not easy to get access," Indri finished. "If I make so much as an implication without rock-solid evidence, I'll be looking for a new line of work very soon. And now that you two are involved, rumor has it that you can walk right through wards or break them wide open with a trick of logic. I have colleagues who would be happy to find a way to put this on you rather than offend a senator."
"So, we find something to prove is not us, yes?"
said Khadka. She looked at Tane there. So did Indri. "It's not just about that." Tane glanced back at the lifeless body of Byron Rosepetal and fought down another wave of nausea. "It could just be coincidental phrasing, but if this message really is aimed at us, we might be targets. And I don't like thinking that someone is murdering people in answer to something I did."
"We did,"
Khadka corrected, and crossed the room to grip his shoulder.
"Killer taunts us both. We find who is behind this mask together."
"I hope so," said Tane, "but I don't see many answers right now." He gestured to the staff spike protruding from Byron's broken skull. "All I have is that the placement of the staff is strange, if this is a pro-magical killing, which doesn't get us any nearer to a suspect." Indri glanced at the spike.
"Strange? What do you mean?"
"Astralites and magical fanatics tend to agree that a person's astral link is anchored in the heart,
symbolically at least. If I was trying to make a point about magical superiority, I'd have planted my spike there, not the face. Tain shrugged. It isn't much. Maybe our killer just doesn't have a theological bent. Indri was silent a moment, prodding the inside of her cheek with her tongue, and then,
"You're right. It isn't much. That's all you have for me?"
Tain spread his hands helplessly. "Right now it is." She sighed.
"I was afraid of that. I suppose there's no helping it, then."
He knew what that meant without asking. "Do what you have to. We won't put up a fight." He looked pointedly at Katka. "Will we, Katka?" A small part of him hoped she'd resist, but there wouldn't be any point, not with so many blue caps on the estate.
"Depends on fight."
Katka raised an eyebrow at Indri.
"What does he mean?"
Tain answered first. "She's going to have to take us to the yard." Chapter 4
"What aren't you telling me, Carver?"
Chief Constable Andus Durin leaned forward over the table in the small interrogation room, his thick mustache inches from Tain's face. A sturdy, middle-aged human, Durin's interrogation technique largely hinged upon loudly demanding answers until his cheeks turned as red as the half-circle of thinning hair about his temples. "Not a thing, Chief Durin," said Tain. "I have nothing to hide. Haven't your divinations told you that yet?"
"We both know that won't stop you from lying."
Durin had cast a truth spell at the start. Like all constables, he was a trained mage. But Tain had a reputation for evading divinations, a fact that was apparently very frustrating for a man used to getting information the easy way. And equally frustrating for Tain, when he didn't actually have anything to lie about. "Look," he said wearily, "that message might have been aimed at me and Katka, but it might just as easily have been an unfortunate phrasing. And if it was for us, why should that mean we're involved? We can't control who hears about the mage breakers," he grimaced as he said it, "or what they decide to do about it." He already knew it wouldn't work. He'd been under interrogation for more than an hour and explained his position too many times to count.
"You're always involved," Durin barked. "You and that orc of yours."
"Half-orc," Tain corrected. "Her name is Katka, and she's not mine. We're partners." Presumably she was undergoing similar questioning in one of the other rooms, and probably making it more difficult than I ever could. Katka's astral invisibility meant none of their truth spells would work on her. She'd just give them whatever answers amused her most and grin that unsettling grin that showed every one of her sharp, lupine teeth. Tain smiled slightly, imagining some high-ranking constable squirming in discomfort at the sight. Durin snorted.
"I don't care what her name is. What I care about is how often you two happen to be nearby when something goes wrong. You've done more than enough damage to this city already. You aren't talking your way out of trouble this time."
"He's never going to listen. He wants to believe he has something on us." According to Indri, Durin had resented Tain and Katka since the incident with Nieris and the airship, a high-profile case they'd solved when his constables couldn't. It wasn't supposed to be public knowledge, but rumors had spread, and the chief constable wasn't a man who took well to being upstaged. But the last thing Tain wanted was another hour of this. He had to try.
"I know you think we're a menace, but most of that damage wasn't our fault. How many times do I have to tell you that Katka and I didn't dig that ton—"
The door to Tain's right swung open, and a familiar voice interrupted him mid-sentence.
"Chief Durin,"
said Lady Abena Jassani, protector of the realm,
"I hope you'll forgive my intrusion."
What is she doing here? It couldn't be a coincidence. The Lady Protector didn't just walk into random interrogation rooms on a whim. Lady Abena wore a topcoat as black as her short, tightly curled hair, with trousers and boots to match. Her deep brown skin made her Angekan heritage obvious. House Jassani's roots were in Estian-occupied territories on the southern continent from before the Mage War. Unlike Durin, she didn't demand attention with red-faced bluster. She simply entered a room, and all eyes went to her before she said a word. Tain hadn't met very many people with that kind of presence, and fewer still with the wisdom to use it well. Abena Jassani, in his experience, had both. Durin and Tain both rose in their seats as the Lady Protector stepped inside. One of her mage blades, devoted protectors of all who held her office, stepped in after her, a lithe elven woman wearing a brass cuirass over a crisp blue and white uniform.
The Mageblade moved to stand at attention just beside the door, her hands never straying far from the glyph-etched saber and dual Ankrist pistols at her waist.
"Never an intrusion, Lady Avena,"
Durin said, unconsciously smoothing down the front of his uniform with one hand.
"At your service, always. What do you need?"
"I understand you've been asking Mr. Carver and Miss Katka some questions."
Lady Abena greeted Tane with a nod there.
"Admirably thorough, given the message found at the scene. I'm sure they've been very cooperative, given their past service to the Protectorate."
Durin looked sidelong at Tane, a slight frown beneath his bushy mustache.
"Yes, well..."
"Excellent. In that case, I do need to speak to Mr. Carver, and I'm sure you were just finishing up. Mr. Carver, you've shared everything you know, haven't you?"
"Of course, your ladyship." Tane flashed Durin a quick smirk.
"Then I'm sure Chief Durin has more important things to do,"
Lady Abena said, in a tone that made it clear she wasn't asking.
"Let me take him off your hands, Andis."
Durin's cheeks flushed, but he was trapped. It went against the man's nature to argue with anyone more wealthy and powerful than he was, and even if he'd decided to be stubborn, he had no strong evidence against Tane.
"Yes, your ladyship," he said, with obvious reluctance. "Is there anything else?"
"Yes," said Lady Abena. "I would appreciate it if you gave us the room for a moment. And please, have Miss Katka brought to me as well."
Behind her, the elven Mageblade was already pushing the door open.
"It would be my pleasure, of course."
Durin's face was an angry red from his neck to the bare expanse of his scalp, an absurd contrast to his ingratiating tone.
"And if you need anything else from me before you go, I'll be in my office."
With a final, furious glance at Tane, he strode out the open door. When the door had swung closed again, Tane bowed his head to Lady Abena in gratitude.
"Thank you, your ladyship.
He would have kept me in here until I admitted to every crime in Thallus for the last 6 weeks." Lady Abena regarded Tane for a moment before answering, and then,
"You did tell him everything you know, I hope. Audland owes you a debt, and I believe Inspector Lovial when she tells me you are innocent, but you do strike me as someone who might find it tempting to frustrate Chief Durin."
"There was nothing to tell," Tane said. "I don't know anything."
"And yet the killer's message could have been directed at you and Miss Katka. The wording was unusual."
"Trust me," said Tane. "The possibility looms fairly large in my mind just now. I'm not thrilled at the thought of a murderer taking a personal interest in me." A knock at the door before Lady Abena could answer, and then Indri's voice from the other side.
"Your ladyship?"
Lady Abena motioned for her Mageblade to open the door once more, and Indri led Katka in.
"Inspector Lovial,"
Lady Abena said, with a welcoming nod.
"You two can thank her for this reprieve. She contacted me on your behalf. You're very fortunate I was able to get away from preparing for my trip to the continent."
The Lady Protector was following the success of her airship treaty with a diplomatic tour of the Kalinian continent aboard the Hesliar. It had been a popular talking point in the streets and taverns of Thallus in recent weeks.
"Lucky us," Tane said wryly. "I owe you a favor, Rhi."
Indri smirked at him.
"You owe me 1,000. I'm not holding my breath on repayment."
"I did offer you that dinner," he countered, "which you still haven't taken me up on."
"Well," Indri said, "maybe if you two stopped breaking the city every week, I'd have time."
A loud crack from Katka's neck headed off Tane's response.
"It's good you get us out,"
she said to Indri, rolling her head from side to side.
"Here, same questions much longer. Maybe I break little gnome woman's nose on table, get thrown in cells."
She grinned.
"Better this way, but not so satisfying."
"I'm sure Inspector Gavins appreciates your restraint,"
Indri said dryly, and then dipped her head to the Lady Protector.
"Lady Avena, thank you for coming. I'm sorry to bother you with this, but I don't like to see time and resources wasted on a dead end. Chief Durin..."
She hesitated there and shook her head.
"I'm sorry, I shouldn't. It's not my place." "You need not censor yourself in front of me, Inspector Lovial,"
Lady Avena said with a small smile.
"I haven't yet clapped anyone in irons for speaking honestly, and I assure you I am well aware of the Chief Constable's shortcomings. But... with his political allies. Suffice it to say, I am doing what I can. For now, I can only ask that you do the same. Word of the murders will be on the streets by tomorrow at the latest, and I fear the connection to the Knights of the Emperor may lead to panic. The demonstrations these last weeks have caused enough unrest in the city already."
"You mean Silver Dawn?"
Katka asked.
"You think they have hand in this? Usually they just yell."
The Silver Dawn was a loosely organized group of protesters, emboldened by the recent decision to allow non-magicals to attend the university. Their criticism of the inequalities in Audish society was seen by some as close to treasonous, and a number of their demonstrations of late had taken a turn toward angry confrontation.
"They haven't hurt anyone yet," Indri said. "And they're in favor of non-magical rights. These murders don't seem to fit their agenda."
"I have no reason to believe they're directly involved," Lady Abena clarified. "They have the right to their protests, of course, so long as no one is harmed, but their presence has already invited counter-protesters. Tensions between the magical and non-magical are already high, and word of a killer who may have pro-magical motives will only fan the flames. I am in the midst of certain diplomatic negotiations, and it will hardly strengthen our position if the citizenry or the Senate are losing their heads over..."
She paused there, frowned.
"A poor choice of words given the circumstances, but true all the same. I have already assigned my mage blades to patrol the roost, but I would prefer they not be necessary. The person behind this mask must be apprehended before anyone else dies, and if Nieris Phantom Knights are in fact real, they need to be stopped."
Indri stood tall and gave a firm nod.
"I will do everything in my power to make that happen, Lady Abena." "I expect nothing more or less," said Lady Abena. "Mr. Carver, Miss Katka, I must ask you not to insert yourselves into Inspector Lovial's investigation except where she asks. Your past service is greatly appreciated, but this is a sensitive matter, and you too do have a history of somewhat less than sensitive methods. After tomorrow afternoon, I will be unavailable to extract you from any trouble you might find yourselves in for some time."
"Listen," Tane said defensively, "we didn't dig that..."
"They'll be good, Lady Abena,"
Indri interrupted.
"I'll make sure of it." "Very well."
Lady Abena gestured to her mage blade, who opened the door for her. She fixed Indri with one last solemn look.
"I am placing a great deal of faith in you, Inspector Lovial. I cannot delay my tour, so I must leave this matter in your hands. Please don't disappoint me."
With that, she strode out of the room. The elven mage blade followed after her, letting the door swing closed once more.
"Rather make Killer angry than her, I think,"
Katka said, and flashed Indri a grin.
"Best solve this, yes?"
"That's the plan."
Indri sounded confident enough, but Tane could tell Lady Abena's last words had shaken her. The Lady Protector had been very generous with the three of them, but she was still the most powerful woman in the Protectorate.
"Although I wouldn't mind a little bit more to go on."
Katka clapped Indri on the shoulder.
"We will help. If messages for us is our problem too. Right, Carver?"
"That depends on Indri," Tane said, and looked to her with a raised eyebrow. "You heard Lady Abena. This is her investigation." He kept his tone controlled and his breathing even, in case she tried a truth spell. He wasn't about to let this go, not until he was sure the killer hadn't aimed that message at him and Katka. Indri rolled her eyes.
"Right. I'm sure if I said so, you'd just go home and forget all about this."
Katka cackled at that.
"Knows you too well, Carver."
"So much for that." "There's a first time for everything," Tane ventured.
"Don't try so hard," said Indri. "You'll break something. Look, I don't want to cut you out of this. I have two candidates for our next protector dead, and someone found a way to bypass a lot of wards and divinations to do it. I need to know how, and you're the expert on that. Can we agree that if I keep you two involved, you'll follow my lead and try to keep yourselves beneath Chief Durin's notice?"
"I'll take that," said Tane. "Katka?" Katka nodded.
"Is fair."
"It's a deal, then,"
Indri said, and pulled open the door.
"Come on, I'll see you out for now. I'm going to have to spend some time reassuring Chief Durin that he's still in charge before anything else."
They'd barely stepped out the door when a trembling, high-pitched voice pierced the air.
"You!"
A blur of motion, and then something struck Tane in the chest. A blonde woman, no more than a foot tall, fluttering on iridescent dragonfly wings. She gripped Tane's collar in one fist and battered his chest with the other, tears rolling down her face. He knew who she was. Her deep red and green dress was too finely made and expensive for anyone else. And besides, he'd seen her picture hanging above the fireplace just outside the murder scene. Elsa Rosepetal, the senior senator of House Rosepetal, and one of the most powerful women in the city. Tane took a startled step back. She moved with him, still clutching his collar.
"Senator, I..."
She beat her hand against his chest once more.
This is your fault!
Rage glinted in her teary eyes.
That message was for you! You... Mage Breakers! My son is dead!